come to order. A quorum is present, consisting of Chair Senator Paul Fisher and Senator Moss. We have two items before us. One is Senate Bill 484, a proposed committee substitute, which reflects changes made after my conference yesterday with officials from the department. It's not before us yet. It may reach us before we adjourn. So we'll take that second. First item is Senate Bill 431, relating to the purchase of residential care services for children. There is in your folders a proposed committee substitute for that. This bill was sponsored by the Rules Committee at the request of the governor, and the administration is here to testify. John?
Mr. Chairman, members, and John King from the Department of Health and Social Services.
And you have a new fiscal note, Mr. King.
Right.
Which is dated 15th February 1984, correct?
That's correct.
Why don't you proceed and tell us about 431 and its costs?
Okay. As we discussed last week, we feel strongly that 434 will be a better method of distributing residential child care funds to various facilities throughout the state compared to the present full cost of care method, which has created some real problems of what I would call feast and famine. Some years facilities have more than enough funds to fund their programs, and other years, due to the way the rate is structured, they do not have enough funding in order to accomplish the programs that they need to with the children that are in the facilities. This new procedure would, as mentioned last week, provide for a granting process in which the department would actually purchase a specific number of beds in a given community and would provide the funds on an upfront basis each month or each quarter to pay for those beds ahead of time, and therefore have the beds available to the department and the facilities appropriate, and then plan around the fact that they will have a certain amount of funding. They can hire the staff, and they will not have to be constantly hiring and laying off staff. This bill, we had a couple of minor problems with it. I think the legislative drafting felt there were two issues that needed to be changed, and those have been changed, and the department is in agreement with those. And that was in the area of the repeal section, and I think they're now repealing and amending that. Now we're doing it at this point. And then on the effective date, there had to be a change made, and I think last time we testified that the effective date of January 1, 1985 was the department wasn't agreeing with that, and we would be able to continue the program as it presently stands between July 1 and January 1, 1985.
Does the adoption of this bill conflict in any way with the supplemental appropriation for federal and CIPCA to be approved earlier in the week?
Is there a redundancy? No, my understanding is that those are supplemental appropriations to Bethel and the receiving home. The way the bill is written, that the funds are to be expended by June 30th of 84. There is a problem that we had discussed with this committee last year, that the present legislation sets a certain rate, and that rate has been established in statute. And usually when that has happened, that there is no way to contravene that kind of statutory setting of a rate without a change of that statute. And what on that bill, that we had a similar one last year, there is some question to the constitutionality or the legality of now handling a supplemental appropriation to individual facilities that have a rate set. That does not change the fact that these facilities' rates, when established under that bill, were too low, and therefore both these facilities definitely need the supplemental funding. And so it's sort of the department's been caught in a bind, in the sense that as we provide the information, there's no question the facilities have rates are too low. On the other hand, the rates as established by the legislature, their sense are being contravened by the piece of legislation.
Mm-hmm. You might want to walk us through this to refresh us then section by section, if you would. And let me, before we do that, tell you that we received a telephone call today from John Garvin indicating that the supplemental bill for Bethel and Sitka ought to have included funds for Alaska Children's Services. That information, if true, reached us too late for action. But I would ask you, since we're talking about residential child care, whether you have any information.
John Garvin was here a couple of weeks ago and has handed to both the department as well as my understanding to the legislators the fact that Alaska Children's Services is facing a $400,000 deficit in this fiscal year. There are other facilities that are facing deficits also. And I guess the problem in terms of, particularly for example, I know Senator Fisher has been talked about the Kenai Care Center, did not have built into their budget the change in the Social Security laws, and therefore they were facing, I think, it was a $20,000 or $25,000 deficit. And that's the problem of opening up the whole issue of do you put in supplementals for these facilities? Because my own suspicion is that there are, you know, a lot of the facilities have some deficits due to changes as well as the freezing of those rates over the last 2 years. And if we are to, you know, to ask, do we have knowledge of it? Like I said, we do. The Kenai Care Center definitely has a deficit. We sent a report to Senator Fisher that there are other facilities that were, had not previously adopted Social Security for their employees, and they also are looking at deficits in that area because it is now mandatory. And we have had communication from ACS that they are looking at a $400,000.
How does the state determine when a deficit exists, whether it's because of unforeseen circumstances or poor management?
Well, that's one of the issues with any of those. And in the case of Kenai Care Center, there's a very specific problem. The only deficit that they're concerned, you know, or questioning is the fact that they were, on January 1, had to go into the new Social Security payments. And that situation was one that came about after the passage of Senate Bill 817, which froze the rates. There was no way that their management could plan for those deficits, you know, Kenai Care Center. As far as ACS, that's one of our problems, and as well as Bethel and Sitka, we do not have any specific knowledge in the department about what those deficits represent. And so it's very hard for us to provide testimony because the ACS has said they have $400,000 in deficit, but we don't know if that's because they didn't lay off some of their top management, they have a large management staff, or there are other things that they could have done to conserve funds in the middle of the year. I have no idea on that. And for example, in state government, if we had an underfunding situation, we would hold open positions because we can't go over the appropriation. And in fact, in years past, when I was director, I held open as many as 25, 30, 40 positions in order to cover that underfunding. And so from that standpoint, we cannot, from the department, comment to what the deficits mean. Is it a management problem? Is it a thing in a situation where they prioritize certain costs that the department would not have supported or would have supported? Because at this point in time, a specific rate is adopted by the legislature. We have no setting, no rate-setting mechanism.
Well, that's very confusing and difficult in this area because I see a problem when you have a nonprofit grantee which is caring for children. It's not like the International Harvester Company. If they have bad management, they can close their doors, will import trucks. You have to keep them operating, and you have to have continuity of the service. If they do have bad management, and I don't know if they do or not, they are. The other part of the problem is that continuity may require us to come in and clean up things that shouldn't have occurred in the first place.
Yeah, what's one of the strengths, Senator, of this bill is that presently the department does not have contracts with these facilities. It's just like as if we went out and took our car someplace and said we want a car fixed. We take a child to a place and sign a placement agreement, which is really not a legal contract with these facilities, and then we basically pay the facilities a per diem rate, just like you would at any hotel or anything else. This new bill will result in a process in which the facilities will have to come in with program request for certain dollars in order to get their grant, the department will be able to monitor whether they are actually fulfilling what they have put on paper as far as the treatment, the number of staff that they have, and so on. And the department would, in fact, be able to, in a sense, hold back grant payments or else actually stop the granting process if the management was not up to snuff. At this time, the only thing we can do is just stop placing children, which has happened in some cases where management is not too bad.
But my comment goes to this. Suppose you have a contract for a given rate, a given number of beds, and at the end of the contract period or during the contract period, the grantee or contractor says, Mr. Pugh, my facility has a $273,000 deficit, and unless the state can give us relief next Monday morning, we're going to turn the kids out on the street. In that situation, this becomes an illusion, doesn't it, of a fixed price? You have to provide, you have an emergency then, and you may have to supplement, would seem to me.
I would hope that we'll be able to monitor these more closely, because one of the reasons that we ended up making a decision to send you a revised fiscal note to put a grant coordinator in, who will be, the whole responsibility will be to prepare these grants, to monitor these facilities, and to try, from that standpoint, to stay on top of that situation more closely. One of the things in the present full cost of care legislation, we got 6-month expenditure reports, and very often the ones in December that we would receive from the facilities were not very accurate in terms of being able to tell if there was any financial problems going on. And I think from this standpoint, we would hope that we'll be able to get more information. There will be monthly reports required, which is not the case in the present law or regulation.
Reference your memorandum to Senator Fisher, February 21, totaling $87,258 for FICA costs. Would it be equitable and prudent for the legislature as a supplemental to pass an appropriation of $87,258 so that these groups' FICA issues can be met?
As far as I feel strongly that this is something that they could not have prepared for. This is a bill that was passed by Congress after the legislation, Senate Bill 817, froze the rates. And from that standpoint, I think those are costs that have been identified as true deficits that management could not have planned for because of the timing of the two pieces of legislation, the state legislation and the federal Congress. So I think that $87,000 is something that has been identified as a true supplemental cost.
Senator Fisher, if that would be helpful to the Kenai Care Facility, I would support that. I would ask that we have a HES committee bill for an appropriation of $87,258 spread, as shown in the memorandum. The understanding of the department will send us a support letter. All right, would you go through the 431 then, Seriano? Just tell us what this does.
Okay, the first section, section one, basically provides for competitive bids, and it sets up a process in which we are able, it changes the 3705-230 to include
the thing is, the main addition is like number 11 on page 4, but the legislative directors things the changes to make it.
With 3705, yeah. Okay.
So
section one, which basically, beginning of section one, just cleans up 3705 and makes this piece of legislation compatible with 3705. And it says on 11, the provision of this section concerning competitive bids do not apply to the purchase of residential child care services under AS 4740. And that's just to make clear that this is a granting process and not a contractual process. Okay, and then 4740, which is the major piece of it, the purchase of services, 4740-010 is section which outlines how the process will take place. And it says, well, in section, in number one, A1, we'll purchase the services only under grants to local governmental units or nonprofit corporations. If you remember last week, there was some question about that. Some people are concerned that this opened it up to profit-making corporations, and it does not. It still limits it to governmental units or nonprofit corporations. And the department will award grants for a specified number of beds, and that's a very different procedure than the past, in which we actually paid for the set rate in the given year based on prior year expenditures and the number of beds that have been occupied. So if somebody had only 50% occupied, and yet they kept their staff on the whole year, the rates actually could jump up a total of 50%. That rarely happens, but sometimes it did jump up due to unoccupied beds by 25-30%. In this case, the department will actually purchase beds, and we will be making their estimates of how many beds we need ahead of each given year.
Also, they will. Will this tend to have the effect of putting more children in residential child care facilities than would otherwise be placed on the idea that, well, the bed is empty, if we're paying for the bed whether we use it or not, so we might as well put the kid in the Rabbit Creek facility?
If, Senator, if you were asking me that question 4 years ago when I became director of Regional Family Youth Services, I would have said yes. I would have had some real hesitancy about this. But at this point in time, the actual dollars going into residential child care, compared against, you know, inflationary costs and so on, have forced a reduction of the beds, and in a sense have forced the department to look at other alternatives to residential child care.
This came up in the finance subcommittee.
And so we have actually reduced the number of residential child care beds that we are utilizing. What this bill will do is in a sense freeze us at that level, may even reduce us a little more, but it will guarantee facilities a certain funding. And that's why most of them, about 95% of the facilities support the bill, because it gives them a steady income month to month rather than any kind of up and down reimbursement for a factor that one month they have, they may have out of a 10-bed facility, they have all 10 of them filled. The next month, if a couple of kids leave, they may only have 8 filled, the next month, 10. This way, they will have a set rate for the beds, and they will get the funding month by month. Will not have cash flow problems. But if there is, I would say that there will not be a tendency to increase the number of residential beds, because we're going to be locked into some increases each year for the facilities increasing their programming or bettering their programming as well as cost of living. And given the factor of the declining revenue situation, we're kind of bucked up against the situation where we're not going to get a lot of increase in beds, and we're going to have to live within, you know, a moderate increase in the budget. And so I would say that will not happen.
I'd just like to know if the section or the bill from line 10 on page 1 through line 5 on page 4 is your main to the title.
Line 10 on page 1 to line 5.
Through line 5 on page 4. I don't see whether there's any, how it can be germane to the bill, to the title. The only thing you've done there now on line 6 and 8, on page 4, you said the provisions this section contain compared to bids do not apply to the person of residential child care service under Alaska Statute 4740. I can't see what the rest of this has got to do with it.
Senator, I've noticed a number of bills recently where what the drafters have done, it looks like here they went back and changed some language that means the same thing but is incorrect, like shall for must, when for where, and that kind of thing. It looks like they used the vehicle in this bill to make those changes in 3705.
That's correct.
It's not germane to the title.
I guess that's where I was confused in the beginning, Senator Moss. I think what we're talking in the title, we're talking about residential child care services, but the bill relates to the cost of supplies, materials, equipment, which I don't know if you would call that a service as much as some other.
My point is, I don't believe the first section of this bill, the first part of this bill, is germane to the title of the original bill that we had here that we were given before.
Well,
I see nothing wrong.
I think it comes about this way. Section 1 amends 3705-230 and provides for competitive bidding. The only substantive change is at line 6 through 8 on page 4, which exempts residential child care services from competitive bidding. So then once you have that threshold, bringing in section 230 for that minor change, the drafter takes the opportunity to do everything in section 230 of the manual of drafting currently in use suggests the drafter to do.
I don't know, I'm just suspect of things like that.
No changes until we hit line 6 of page 4.
I'll be much happier with it because I think it's germane now.
Oh, we have no problem with that. The rest in terms of some kind of style. You have no problem.
I have no problem. And on that section, on 6 through 8, though, you can make some reference back to that particular part that you have. But I just feel suspect to that when I look at it.
Nancy, the other thing you might do is this. You might see if there's another place where this exemption from competitive bidding could be inserted so we don't have to reference 3705-230 at all. This is basically a simple bill once you get through all that, isn't it? And the rate making will be done by a committee, so we don't have to be concerned with that here.
That's correct.
And they could take into account geographical.
They will take into account geographical needs as well as the demand. And one of the things that we'll have to take into consideration is there are certain communities that are not of the size to have certain levels of services. And so, for example, Anchorage has to get some services that are not provided in other communities, and that will have to be taken into consideration. Focus will be on community-based programs, and that's why we feel strongly about having a grant process. We support community-based treatment and feel strongly that each community ought to have that opportunity to bid for the beds that are necessary for the children that need that care in their communities.
Are there other questions, Mr. Chairman? If not, what we'll proceed to do then is we'll have a true community substitute drafted consistent with Senator Lawson's request.
Senator, could I have one other thing, and maybe you and I could get together on this? I'd like to, since I did not have an opportunity the other day on Bethel, to discuss that. I think we may need to sit down with attorneys to determine the Bethel Receiving Home, the Sitka, and the others, and how we accomplish that. There was some discussion in this committee last year. We do have.
You have a letter.
Oh, here's a letter to Representative Hayes from last year that we could get copies, which raised some questions about being able to give money to these facilities. And once again, I just want you to know that it's not the department does not feel there are some true needs there, like I said, particularly the Social Security monies. But how we, the vehicle for it, continues to sort of get away from us. I don't know how to do it, given what the present statute is. And it may be that it would be appropriate to somehow amend it in here. I don't know. But to make sure that we don't run legally in this property. This came up after the hearing the other day, so OMB brought this to our attention again.
So, well, I don't understand. You were here earlier urging the supplemental for Bethel and Sitka. I understood you say that they had a justified need, that the rate was too low.
Right, that's correct. No, I'm saying again, I think the rates aren't too low. They were just, you know, we said that last year. But what I'm saying is the mechanism is a problem. And as you can read in this letter again, there are some questions in the Attorney General's office of the legality of doing it. Now, last year, after the bill passed, the Attorney General, they didn't veto it. What they ended up doing is saying, this is questionable, but the governor can sign it. And I just wanted, again, to say that this is one that we need to at least be aware of the Attorney General's opinion last year. And I maybe the legislative attorney needs to look at it, and I think if we had the other side, that would be fine.
I'll be glad to talk to you about it. We don't have control of the bill anymore in this committee. It'll come before me again as a member of the finance committee.
Right.
All right. The next item is 484. And let's stand at ease a minute to see where our draft is. Gentlemen, I'll try to, while waiting for the draft, tell you what's going on with 484. A position paper from the Department of Health and Social Services expressed concerns and recommended the bill not be supported as written. I met with Mr. Middleton about these concerns yesterday or the day before, and as a result of that, requested a redraft of the bill so that the concerns of the department could be met. The draft that you've received as an appropriation for $8 million is designed to be an accompaniment, which would set out an $8 million social services fund. I think the draft that you will see as a substitute will meet Mr. Middleton's concerns and the department's concerns, but I'll have him speak to that as soon as the bill gets here. The problem that this bill tries to address is that in the past, the Anchorage Social Services Block Grant has been taken from capital funds and has been an annual uncertainty. We've also had requests from Fairbanks for a block grant approach. The concept here is that there would be a statewide social services fund in the amount of $8 million. Approximately half of that per capita basis would go to Anchorage. About $750,000 would go to Fairbanks, which is what Mayor Wally has requested. The fund would be created in the Department of Health and Social Services, and the three health systems agencies in the state would make the needs assessments within their geographical areas, and their geographical areas cover the entire state, through citizen task forces, and make annual recommendations to the department on which nonprofit agencies would receive funding out of a social service block grant. This is the first time that there is an effort to provide some social services money for every area of the state. However, a municipality could opt out of the health systems agency needs assessment program by having its own, which would allow, for example, Anchorage, which has health powers, to do what it has always done, that is have a citizen task force, public input process, and through the assembly make decisions. And the department could make adjustments in per capita allotments based on recommendations of the health systems agency or a municipality under departmental regulations, or under factors such as rural location, inflation, or other special problems. What we have in mind there is that some urban areas like Anchorage, Bethel, Fairbanks attract social problems because of the existence of social services within them. Mr. Middleton, if you've had a chance to skim this in the light of our meeting, I might premature for the department to be able to report on the, what its position is with regard to the draft, but it does represent conversations with Member Meistat, myself, back with Senator yesterday, and largely addresses concerns which we did refer to Senator Josephson with regard to the initial draft of 1894. If there are questions you'd like to ask, we'd be glad to have yourself.
I'll also say that one of the things that this would do is it would, I think, strengthen the health service, health systems agencies. And we were talking about allowing them to receive, and it is in the bill on page 2, a kind of 5% administrative cost for doing the assessment of need and making recommendations on the allocation of money. So that, for example, the health systems agency for South Central, if Anchorage opted out, we calculated it would probably get about $50,000 as additional funds, which it could utilize, which would strengthen those health systems agencies whose federal fundings have been reduced. Senator Fisher?
I have a question. How would this work, say, take a borough that doesn't have health power, that there's agencies within that borough that provide services? How would the money trickle into those agencies, or would it not?
My appreciation is the way that the structure is that the recommendation will come from the health systems agency through to the department. The department will fund dollars to the provider agency that is
right.
However, one of the byproducts of this legislation could be to encourage the borough, say the Kenai borough, to adopt health powers so that it could do its own needs assessment if it wished to. What I think maybe the way to proceed with this is that there's no objection is to take this matter up again on Monday and introduce the appropriation measure, give you a chance to read the department's comments, the bill, the original bill, and the substitute, to be more comfortable with it. I don't want to hold it up too long, but I think that would be reasonable. And and then you might come back to us Monday. Could you do that if you've gone through the bill? Objection to that? We'll introduce on Monday the appropriation measure. There's no other business coming for us to adjourn until Monday at 3.